Hey everyone, this is Brooke Medina and Ray Notestein, and we want to thank you for being listeners to CivitTalk. We also want to let you know that we're now on iTunes and Google Play. So if you use either one of those platforms, you can find us there and just type in CivitTalk, CIVITALK, and you can find us there.
And don't forget to rate our podcast on Google Play and iTunes. The more stars you give us, better exposure we'll get. 5 stars, please.
Thanks, everyone.
From the underground bunker of the Civitas studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's CivitTalk with your hosts Brooke Medina and Ray Notestein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of CivitTalk. We got some great topics today. Partial government shutdown. What's the latest with Trump and Schumer and Pelosi, including their responses? Civitas released a new corporate income tax study. Brooke will tell you a little bit more about that coming up. And we're also going to just jump into things on this toxic masculinity. A lot of attention made by the APA. Study been released in 2018, but now receiving a little bit more attention. Is this an issue, toxic masculinity for young boys and their well-being? So let's just jump right into it. Brooke, how you doing? How was your weekend?
My weekend was good. It consisted primarily of grocery shopping and walking around in my pajamas and the kids and I just watching Netflix and things like that. So it was really chill. We went to church on Saturday because our church has Saturday services. So it was nice.
Yeah, you're one of those people that goes on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Do you ever get convicted that it's not the Sabbath? Is that ever like a point of
the
conviction?
Sabbath is in my heart.
Right.
And
no,
in
that's
my
true.
Heart, it's Saturday.
That's so. Totally. I think it's totally fine. I don't get all worked up about that stuff. But mm-hmm. I know some people do, actually.
Yeah.
So I went to a Carolina Hurricanes game, Kelly and I, with some folks from Campbell, and that was a lot of fun. I love hockey. I have a hard time watching it on TV. I hardly don't watch it a whole lot on TV, but it's a great in-person, live sporting event, so I had a lot of fun there.
And were there any fights?
There were not, and actually, one of the cool things about going to hockey games, occasionally catch a really great fight, but there's not as much fights in the NHL as there is in sort of minor league hockey, but I'll tell you what, those are definitely some elite athletes, and just watching them, to me, was impressive, and what they can do, and just not only the conditioning of those guys, but just how powerful they are with their shots and in game. So I'm going to hopefully go back soon. I'm excited about it. I've sort of watched the Hurricanes on TV a little bit.
Who won?
Last night. The Hurricanes won. Mm-hmm. They did this like, Kelly called it a Moana dance. After they won, they all go out into the middle of the ice and like plant some kind of, they're stick, but it's like a sword. And then everybody falls down.
Oh, cool.
And she called it the Moana dance.
So
it made me think of you because you like Moana. So also went to a Campbell basketball game. That was fun. And Henry got baptized at church. Our youngest son, he's, I don't know them. I'm not good at math, but he was born in October, like October 25th. So however old he is, the last year, he's a few months old. So that was a lot of fun.
That's exciting. Yeah. Congratulations.
He had his man dress on and he cried.
Did he wear it confidently though?
He did, but he cried throughout the baptism. He got a comment from the pastor that is a little, he was a little difficult, but that's Henry. I mean, he's very chill sometimes and then very like difficult sometimes.
That is a baby's prerogative, that's to be sure.
Yep.
But okay, let's hop into the President Trump address from the Oval Office. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did. I watched the, I think it ended up being 12 minutes.
Yeah, it was really short.
So I thought Trump made some good points. I mean, you know, the media sets these expectations so low for Trump. You know, he's not slobbering and drooling and yelling. And so, you know, you watch it, you expect Trump.
No, but he did have like a nasal thing going on.
He did. And I think people were commenting on that something about his voice was off. But, and he was kind of, I don't know if he was sighing. He does that thing where he sometimes,
he was just during the debate, breathing really heavy.
Yeah, he breathes kind of heavily. But and that may be just he's, you know, slightly overweight, Trump is. But you know, I thought he made a good case. I mean, mm-hmm. this is something we've been dealing with a long time. Now, I think you can argue whether he's being responsible in terms of, you know, is he holding the federal government hostage? But you know, this is something that we have to start doing. I think there's going to have to be more pitched battles. I mean, we're $22 trillion in debt. I wish there'd be some pitched battles about our debt, like there is the border and some of these other issues. I mean, I believe border security is a crucial issue. It needs to be addressed. So I thought Trump did okay. And the funny thing, of course, was Pelosi and the Schumer response. What was your thought there?
Oh, okay. I'm kind of snickering over here.
Yeah, it was.
So the optics of it were horrific.
They looked angry.
A, I liked Nancy's makeup. I think whoever her makeup artist did a great job. The color was good on her. So aesthetically, she looked nice. Otherwise, the way they're like squeezed into this podium, yeah. I mean, look at you and I are in a small room right now, and we're not even that close to each other.
Do you think the mortician did their makeup?
Stop.
What?
Stop.
That's wrong. They kind of looked like cadavers to me.
That's bad.
I think they're so old. Trump looked, you know, Trump's old too, but they looked older, and it made me like think. The first thing I thought is like, wow, this is the great argument for term limits. Seeing these two old people that have been in Congress forever.
Well,
and I
Chuck
was like,
looked so angry. Like he
did. He was like
the memes that came out of this. I'm sorry, we're not getting to substance at the moment. I'm just gonna talk about the memes that came from this. Were hilarious. So a lot of people said this is the new American Gothic. It's just like Nancy and Chuck over here. Someone started a GoFundMe for a second podium for Nancy and Chuck because they were just like so squeezed in. It just was not a good look whatsoever.
No, it definitely wasn't a good look. I thought they had a couple good points, but because of like all the memes and stuff, it's like I've almost forgot all of them.
Yeah, well, something that I took note of, so I actually I hosted a Facebook Live watch party.
Nerd.
Of it. Yeah, it was so much fun, though. So it was just to my Facebook friends, and we were all watching the live stream together, both Trump's address and Pelosi and Schumer's. And something that caught my attention was they repeated the line manufactured crisis. That's what they continued to refer to it as, which, I mean, yeah, it is in a way as far as the federal shutdown is. That's what they were referring to. But Trump, from his angle, was really talking about he kicked it off with drugs and talking about how drugs are coming through the border and just the opioid epidemic as well as all these other issues, and then went on over to violence. So he was kind of taking this more law and order and fear approach, which there are valid concerns with, you know.
Yeah,
with
I mean,
all those
he brought up the
raised.
Point that illegal aliens are coming to this country and killing people, and that's happening. I mean, you can't deny that. I thought one thing that was discouraging was NBC did this article, and they said, well, they only caught six terrorists on the terrorist list, FBI or whatever, federal terrorist list. They've only caught six at the border, and they were saying they've only caught six, but to me, like, one is enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of increasing border security and things like that. So that to me was a little bit disheartening. I was like, wow, I mean, you're really pushing a narrative that they've only caught six, so that's not a big deal. But I thought it was a huge deal. And I think if you just catch one, I mean, that's a great argument for more border security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And that's the thing. It was interesting because the Democrats were like, we of course agree that we need more border security, but the wall isn't the answer to it, was their response. But the thing is, do they really think we need more border security?
No.
Because their actions have not.
I think part of it too,
to
I mean, I think they'd be willing to negotiate with a different president because it's Trump. They're not willing to cave. I mean, we're talking about $5.7 billion, which is an accounting error in like the Department of Defense budget. And, you know, I think they'd be willing to work with a different president, but they don't want Trump to have a campaign promise. I think that's really what it boils down to. They don't want him going into reelection with having this accomplished. And so this standoff could be a while. And I think one of the things that I think the longer it goes on could actually be an advantage for Trump, because he can make more appeals to the American people. He's got the State of the Union coming up sometime in January. I don't know exactly what day it is, but it's traditionally been in January. So I imagine it's coming up soon. And I think if he goes out there and makes his case in front of the American people, that could be very positive for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you think about that, but I think the longer this goes on, in some ways, it could help Trump. Now, I see you got Republicans caving right and left, as they usually do, but it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of just Trump kind of sticking this out. I don't think he can afford to give in on this, but I think you could say the same thing for Pelosi and Schumer. I mean, they're playing the same game with their base. They can't afford to
cave.
Well,
didn't he come into a meeting with them yesterday and say, you know, are you willing to work with me on this? I've downgraded it from an actual wall, and now it's just going to be steel slats? You know, can we negotiate? And they're saying absolutely
no. They're not going to negotiate. And Trump, you know, he's willing to walk away from deals. And anybody who's bought a car before, I bought new cars, I bought used cars. If you walk away from the deal, you can get a much better deal. I mean, usually, as long as you've made a reasonable offer, the dealership's going to call you back, and you can get maybe a couple $1,000s off than what you may have gotten if you just sort of sat there and negotiated. Sometimes if you walk away, you can get the best deal, and that was Trump's view in that situation. So
yeah, and now somebody on our Facebook audience made a good point, though. Trump kept promising during the campaign that Mexico would pay for it. Now, I understand you start really high in your negotiations and you work your way down. But then he drilled that down on that again during his speech. But the way he did it was like, okay, Mexico is going to pay for it through our renegotiation of NAFTA.
Yeah. And I think the Democrats are
frustrated about
that. Yeah. Democrats are smart to bring that up. And I think, when I heard him talk about that in the campaign, I always kind of thought like, oh, he's going to do that through some sort of trade renegotiation or some sort of reforms to NAFTA. I mean, I never expected Mexico literally to like walk a
here's
check across
yeah.
the border, you know? I mean,
thanks for building.
I think some Americans either took that literally. I never took that literally. And so I think there's always been another way to say, hey, we're going to tax Mexican imports, or we're going to do this in terms of renegotiation of trade deals. So people saying like he was just actually going to walk a check across the border. I'm not sure if they're living in a reality.
Okay. Yeah. So anyways, I think the winner of that whole back and forth between the Democrats and Trump was Trump, in my opinion. What were your thoughts, though?
Yeah.
And I let you say your thoughts. I think part of the problem with the Democrats' response was the optics. Like, that really had a negative impact on them, where a lot of people just ignored what they actually said. Even if they made some good points, they made some emotional appeals and things like that, I just don't think it helped them.
Yeah, I think we're probably at a point now, and we've been in this point for a while. I think, you know, if you hate Trump, you thought he did bad. If you like Trump, you thought he did good. If you're somewhere in the middle, you may not even be 100% sure. But, you know, everybody runs into the camps that they're in right now. So I'm not even sure if optics play a huge deal for people. You know, it does for the people on social media making fun of either side. But I just don't think that many people are moved either way. And I think we're sort of in an entrenched battle now. And mm-hmm. I could see it going on for a while. I don't think either side's going to cave anytime soon. It'll be interesting to see what happens. There's going to be a lot of pressure on the president because, you know, the media's of course going to be on the side of the Democrats here. They always blame Republicans for any sort of government shutdown. So, I mean, we get these stories inundated with, you know, federal workers. I think Friday is the day they're supposed to be paid. So, I mean, the sob stories are going to be relentless at that point. And anybody who's been without a paycheck, I've been there myself. I understand how that is. So it's disheartening that our federal government's so broken that they can't even come to a deal on something that's so, really, when you talk about money in the federal government, really negligible.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see when the shutdown ends. I know that those families that do work for the federal government, like air traffic controllers, which I have a couple of those in my family, actually, and then one good friend down in Houston who's an air traffic controller, or her husband is, and they have to go to work each day. They have a very stressful job, and they are not getting paid at the moment. So I know that that is something of concern, and let's at least hope that we can come to an agreement soon. Moving on.
Yeah, let's talk about this APA study on the...
Before we do that, can we talk about the voter roll purge?
Yes, let's talk about the voter roll purge.
Okay, yeah. So our new elections policy fellow, Andy Jackson, he's a professor right now, and he's also working here at Civitas part-time as a fellow for us, and he is working on elections policy. And so he just wrote a piece at nccivitas.org, and it is about over 500,000 voters that have just been purged from the rolls. This is not something uncommon. It happens every four elections. If someone has not voted and participated in the past four federal election cycles, so since 2010, they will be purged from the voter rolls.
Is it two or four?
It is four. Okay.
That makes sense. That makes more sense.
You're made inactive and you're marked inactive after you have failed to vote in two federal election cycles. So that includes the midterms as well. But then you can show up, let's say, in the third one, and then you just have to verify your address.
Gotcha.
And then if you continue to remain out of the loop for two more cycles for a total of four, then you get purged from the voter rolls. So that's what happened. The only reason that it caught a lot of attention this go around was because it happened over the span of like a week and a half or something rather than multiple weeks, which is what it typically does. So it was just a lot more noticeable and marked. But you can read more about that at nccivitas.org.
Hey, Brooke, can I ask you a question? We're going to totally go off topic.
Oh, great.
But I want to ask you this question.
Okay.
It's kind of become a pet peeve of me. Just going out to eat, you know when you get like the suggested tip amount? When you get a bill,
yes,
sometimes, 15, 18%, 20%. I would love for people to weigh in on this because I want to know what is right. Every time I see the suggested tip amount, they tip the tip amount is on top of the sales tax amount. I know it's not a huge difference. But does that bother anybody else?
That's a good point. I didn't know it was based on. I didn't know they were doing it on the sales.
It's almost everywhere I go. It's after the sales tax amount.
Oh, that's shady.
Yeah.
That's shady.
I mean, do you tip on the sales tax?
I don't.
I don't either.
I don't even look at that suggested tip, though. I'm always doing it in my mind because I'm looking.
But I've been noticing it more, and it's always after the sales tax has been. Why would you tip on top of the sales tax? Now, I'm not against giving a bigger tip, even if it's above the suggested amount. I'm just saying, why would you take into account the sales tax as part of your tip?
That's a valid.
Please, somebody weigh in on that because it's bothering me. And
let's start a petition.
The next establishment that does that, I'm going to ask them. I go, why do you include the sales tax on the tip amount? I haven't been asking, so maybe that's my fault. But almost every establishment that I've been to, they put the sales, it's after the sales tax has been added on, do they put the suggested tip amount?
Thank you, Ray. You're going to change the world.
I'm going to change the world.
Through asking that and challenging the patriarchy.
I'm really interested in how many people, and a lot of people probably just do it unknowingly, but I'm really interested how many people do that unknowingly and how many people make a point about that, you know, saying, why are you telling me to tip on top of the sales tax amount?
Yeah,
because sales tax amounts a lot if you're hundreds of dollars, you know, for a dinner or something.
Yeah,
it's a big deal.
Where are you eating dinner at, Ray?
I'm not at those places.
Hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, I'm just saying if you got a big party or something,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on back to what I was going to talk about, which was our corporate income tax study. Civitas just released this study. It's called Open for Business, and it has to do with the corporate income tax and us eliminating it here in the state of North Carolina. So just bear with me for a moment because we're going to get on to this APA toxic masculinity stuff. But I wanted to mention this study because we have hired researchers. They're both North Carolina based. One's from High Point University and the other is through, I can't remember where Luis DePico is from, but he's an economist. And so they did this study to find out what the impact would be if we totally did away with the corporate income tax here in the state of North Carolina. The reason this is interesting is because, first off, North Carolina has the lowest corporate income tax in the whole U.S. out of those states that have a corporate income tax, which I think there's 48 states that do. So we've got the lowest already. What would happen if we actually eliminated it altogether? So if you go to openforbusinessnc.com, you'll see our study as well as some of the key findings, which was that it would create an additional 43,000 jobs over the period of 10 years. If we eliminated it, it would grow the average worker salary by $1,500. And it would improve North Carolina's business tax climate to the fifth best in the nation. So that's really some incredible, I would say, findings that associated with eliminating this tax. And then something that I think Ray and I find most compelling about eliminating it is that it would reduce the opportunity for cronyism. So the whole Amazon debacle and things like that and Apple, it's taking away this power from politicians to try to use taxpayer funds to incentivize certain businesses to come while dissuading others, because it's not allowing them to pick winners and losers using the corporate income tax cutoffs.
Yeah, I think one of the things we don't understand about the corporate income tax sometimes is that most of that cost, that tax, gets pushed on to the consumer or in lower wages, which gets pointed out very well in the study. But a lot of that cost gets passed on to the consumer in higher prices, and that disproportionately hurts poorer people. And, you know, it's like in some ways like a regressive tax, because it does disproportionately fall on people who just are not as wealthy or mm-hmm. lower middle class to poor people. I mean, they pay more for the service, they pay more for the good, and the disproportionate amount hits them. And I think also, I mean, it's only, I can't remember Brooke exactly, but it's only like 2.5 or 3 or 4% of state revenue.
3%.
So yeah, I mean,
and it would, and we would recoup that and then some after just a couple of years.
To me, there's really no reason for keeping it. You know, I mean, it's a nice talking point, I guess, to say that you have the lowest one in the nation, but other states don't have one, so you might as well just scrap it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. So I think that there's a compelling case to be made about that. So anyways, if you want to check out that study, again, it is at openforbusinessnc.com. We will have a video that we'll be releasing. You can catch that on our Facebook, and we will also put it on Twitter. So if you are a tweeter and you like to stay on Twitter more than Facebook, you can go ahead and follow us. Our handle is at NC Civitas there as well. So anyways, let's move on and let's talk about this toxic masculinity, Ray.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about toxic masculinity in general, just in the culture. There was a study released. It's getting more attention now. And here's just a quote from the study. This is talking about, especially making the link that toxic masculinity is harming men and young boys. Here's one quote. Indeed, awareness of privilege and the harmful impacts of beliefs and behaviors that maintain patriarchal power have been shown to reduce sexist attitudes in men and have been linked to participation in social justice activities. So some of the things that are toxic, stoicism, competitiveness. Those are just a couple traits
that's
that they deemed
dangerous and toxic.
Yeah, I mean, the classicist talks about the importance of stoicism, the Stoics and all
right,
that.
Right, right. Okay, so one of the big problems I have with this study, and it came out in August of 2018, but it just, APA actually issued a tweet the other day that caused it to just kind of, buzz around online. And it was traits, you already read that, I'm sorry.
Yeah, some of the traits I didn't mention were dominance and aggression.
So. Yeah, so it was interesting, though, because they lumped negative traits in with positive ones. And then they called that all traditional masculinity. And then said that was bad. And that's the dangerous part. Because, yes, we do know that violence, aggression, those sort of things are not good. And it's part – men seem to be more prone to those things than women. So it should be addressed. But how would, you know, women feel at large? I know how I would feel about this if they took other traits like likelihood to be manipulative and paired it with something like nurturing and called that all traditional femininity and said that was toxic.
Right. Or what if traditional are just toxic femininity. Maybe we should talk more about that. I mean, Amazon boxes showing up at the house at all time. That's kind of like a toxic.
You know what? Hush. There's nothing wrong with that, Ray. You just keep your opinions to yourself.
See what I mean? Toxic femininity is out of control. We don't have those conversations anymore.
Not a conversation.
But no, I mean, you're basically inherently saying that young boys and males are, there's something wrong with their innate being in character.
Yeah, unless they fit this social justice mold. Right. Okay, because there was the assumption built into that statement that if you reduce those other behaviors, including some of the good ones, like what did your quote say?
Stoicism, competitiveness.
Yeah, and competitiveness isn't a bad thing in and of itself.
No.
It drives us to be better. And I know plenty of competitive women, too. It just manifests differently, typically. But just those sort of things, if we take those out and try to socially engineer men, which we already have been doing for years, ever since third wave feminism, I mean, women are far surpassing men in their earning power. Even if there is some quote unquote gender disparity right now, it's like women are on this positive upward trajectory.
Young women make more than young men now.
And but if we continue on with this, we're just going to have a bunch of pansies. And I don't want to live in a world where I don't want my sons to grow up in a world where being a pansy is something that is, you know, looked upon and applauded. Doesn't mean that we don't push back against the violence, the aggression. We saw in the Me Too movement this, the dark underbelly of men who had allowed power to go to their head and mistreated women. That needs to be dealt with very seriously. And it is, unfortunately, because we haven't been able to navigate nuance in society. It's like even if a man were to say something to a woman that didn't fall under sexual harassment. It got lumped in with it. And so it's just this huge problem all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, the attack on young boys and young men just continues on. And it's really discouraging because, you know, this is a country that, by and large, I mean, obviously you had women who contributed a great deal to this country, but it was built primarily, at least from the structures of our government and some of the leadership, by men. And men had a lot of good ideas, as did a lot of women too. But I mean, I think this just sort of attack that continues has just seeped so deep into the culture and especially higher ed and areas like that. You got more men, smartly, mind you, just sort of bypassing college and some of these areas and structures that are out to get them, so to speak. And I think that that's, you know, you're going to see that manifest itself more. But I think it's just discouraging to see so many people fall into this trap of believing this sort of propaganda and spiel that really attacks men and their innate being and who they were, who they are meant to be and who they're and sort of that character they're created to be by God, and sort of just
absolutely
attack that just sort of main force. There's going to be a lot of cultural harm done by this. So
right. And let's just be honest, as a lady, I appreciate that men are more likely to kill bugs. Like, I like that. You've killed bugs for us in this office before. Yeah. And I don't want to live in a world where guys aren't willing to do stuff like that or grow beards.
Yeah, there's something
like
about,
we were talking about, man. Ben Shapiro's got a beard now because it's just you got to push against toxic masculinity.
Yeah, I just something about when you know, I'm not the manliest guy per se, but there's something about when to me it just sort of when a guy is a little too girly, I don't know, it's just not my scene, sort of. You know,
not your scene.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. We don't have time to unpack that, though,
no,
today.
No, we're not going to unpack that. And I'm not dissing it. You know, if you want to be a girl, that's fine. I'm just saying that's not my scene to sort of like.
I'm sure your wife appreciates that not being your scene, right?
Yeah.
Right, Kelly? So anyways, we're about out of time. So we're going to have to continue this conversation later. But let's just, as a female, I just want to thank all those guys out there that like to kill bugs and are men and aren't pansies. I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, and it's important, I think, just, you know, I think what's struggling is if you're a young parent and you have young boys, the whole school system, everything, a lot of things are set up against them today. And so I think parents just have to be aware of that and educate themselves, because they're not going to receive that from the government. They're not going to necessarily receive that from their public school. Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of the places they're going to receive it from the church. Some churches are much more positive, I think, in building up boys. But some churches aren't equipped or don't bother to do it and push back against some of the cultural things. So I think it's just important to look into that, do that, and to take that task on as a parent is, sort of raising your boys, if you have boys, to be young, godly men, and to just sort of incorporate some of the great things that men can do, that they can be providers, that they can be protectors in this culture, and that's not a negative thing. And to be a gentleman first and foremost, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
that's the most important part. It's not about being aggressive and dominating towards women, but it's about being a gentleman and putting your lady first. So I think that's something that we can all appreciate and sort of the things that we need to uplift as a culture. And I think a negative thing is that some churches, not all churches, certainly not all churches, but some churches, I don't think have done a good job of portraying that 100%. And I think that's a failure of a church, but certainly it's a failure of our culture and some of the things in it today.
Yeah, so. Well, I think you hit the nail on the head in with respect to churches and some within the Judeo-Christian culture where masculinity and femininity aren't, that doesn't, it can be complementary. It
yeah.
doesn't have to be one lording over
absolutely.
The other. We can understand that we are different and unique, and we both have our strengths, and that we need
this
to work
is,
together.
I mean, this
well.
Is how books like Wild at Heart and things like that came out, because, you know, the church and sometimes we're feminizing young men. And so it's just good for, I think, parents. I mean, my main point is parents be aware, if you have boys out there, to just be involved in their lives and help them to be the boys that they're created to be. So
Absolutely.
I think we're about out of time, Brooke, like you mentioned. So we appreciate everybody being here. We're going to come back again. If you have a chance to give the Civitas at all in the next coming weeks or months, please do, because we want to continue to grow this podcast. We want to be the voice for so many of you out there, and to protect you and limit government and expand freedom in North Carolina. It's going to be a big challenge, but we're excited about it here at Civitas.